And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years. Well, today, that person has been found alive and well, and that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
So there you go, Brian. Iconic speech from Dalo. We all remember this. Like, I mean, this is when the whole country, except for Offaly, where you're from, were hoping Clare would win this All-Ireland. And when Dalo delivered that line at the end, like, I mean, fantastic stuff from him. And then followed it up with the Whipping Boys of Munster one, which for me was even better. I get goosebumps whenever I hear that, even though I'm from Laois. Fantastic stuff. Bit of personality in a speech like that.
Asher Dalo's just different gravy, isn't he? He's just away with words and just brilliant speeches. A couple of brilliant, you know, one-liners, as you said yourself. And look, I don't really remember the speech because I was probably in tears. I was brought. I was only a chap at the time. You know, I was 12, and actually I was heading off to school in Kearns, my first ever straight from Croke Park down to Kearns. We were starting on the Sunday night, so
oh Lord,
the next day.
So, to make matters worse.
That was the
worst day of your whole teenage life when you think about it.
I had to get better after that, didn't I?
the one thing I remember about the game, though, is the noise when Clare ran out onto the field.
Unbelievable. And unfortunately, I was actually sitting near the canal end as well, so where all the Clare crowd were predominantly. And you know, it had that famous banner roar as well. They had the bow runs going. Like, it was fantastic, really, as you said, from a neutral's perspective, and the colour and the noise and the, you know, the bow runs and all that sort of thing. So you can see why, you know, to a neutral, they were definitely shouting for them. So it was a fantastic kind of roller coaster for Clare. But look, they did what they set out to do. They won the All-Ireland, dour game, but they were happy to see it that way, because the more open it was going to suit Offaly, obviously.
Well, that was the thing. Like, Clare were massive underdogs going into it. Like, I think in the commentary they said there was about 30 minutes gone. Clare will be happy with not being blown out of the water in the opening 30 minutes. They've lived with Offaly. We'll just give you an idea of, you know, how highly rated Offaly were in comparison to Clare.
Yeah, like, look, Offaly, probably the backdrop of that is the fact that they murdered Kilkenny in that Leinster final on that famous day, you know, in July, when it spilled out of the heavens. The game was delayed for a couple of minutes, and you know, Offaly never came out of the tunnel, and the Kilkenny players were already out in the field, and they were cowering under the umbrellas, and they were hiding everywhere. But Offaly were unbelievable that day. Only a couple of late goals by DJ Carey put, I won't even say respectability on it, but put something on the scoreboard for Kilkenny. So you can see where it was coming from. Even though Clare obviously had done the job themselves, that won Munster, which was obviously no mean feat at the time, and beaten Limerick, and beaten them comprehensively in that Munster final. But they weren't given really credit for it. And the same in the All-Ireland semi-final. You know, they beat Galway, and they were comfortable enough, you know, throughout the game. I know Galway made sports come back at times, but, you know, still they never really looked like they were going to beat Clare. So, you know, Clare had that inner confidence. And it comes back to probably the mindset. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, probably when it was Wexford and Limerick. You know, every player, every ball was massive to Clare. So, you know, that was probably part of their game plan, to stay in the game as long as they can. And the longer they stayed in it, the more they believed in what they were doing. And on the flip side, the less Offaly, you know, believed in what was going on, because they probably expected to blitz them and blow them out of the water. And I thought there was a brilliant moment near the end, maybe about 7 or 8 minutes to go. And one of the Clare forwards, could have been Peter Connell, not really sure, Fergie Tootie or someone, you know, just kept the ball up in the corner, and it goes out for a sideline, and Clare win the sideline. And Mike McNamara and Tony Considine are up there nearly playing the ball along with them, and they're both pointing, the ball is going in. And it just showed their mindset, you know, that every ball was bloody massive.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. They brought a serious intensity to it. We'll talk about that in part two. They played each other, interestingly enough, in a minor All-Ireland final in 89. Offaly won it handy enough. I'm sure there was a lot of kind of crossover of players there.
Yeah, there was, and you know, there was a good few. Obviously, progressed from definitely from the Offaly perspective, but similar too for Clare. And then, you know, Clare and Offaly went on to dominate under 21, but you know, Offaly couldn't win that All Ireland. You know, they lost three under 21 All Irelands around that time, 89, 91, 92. So they just couldn't do it. So you know, those players came up through the ranks, and I suppose 95 was the culmination of this for both sets of teams. You know, and look, at the end of the day, Clare would have viewed it that they won the big one. But what confidence, what inner belief they had, and what you're looking at, and it obviously done with them. You know, his statement at halftime is so iconic now. You know, we're going to do it. Brilliant piece of sheer belief, I suppose, in what they were doing. But you know, for all the talk I thought of Clare's fitness, and it obviously, you know, their training regime seemed to be ridiculous, obviously, you know, with Mike McNamara. And as I said, I witnessed that firsthand, but it was brutal. Still awfully stayed with them for most parts of that game. They were probably blown a little bit harder, but you know, they weren't blown away by sheer fitness either.
Yeah, maybe not. We actually have that Sherlock Nan audio for maybe the one person in the whole country who hasn't heard it by now.
What did you say to your team at halftime?
Well, we haven't played as well as we could in the first half. However, we've been against the wind. So now the game is going to be won now in the next 35 minutes. And I've just asked them to give them that last ounce for Clare for these 35 minutes.
You think you're going to do it?
We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
I don't know what he knew, Brian, but he knew something, because they were dead and buried except for a massive stroke of luck. Eamon Taff was going to be brought off, and he ended up scoring the goal. The ball came off the crossbar, which is very, very unusual in hurling to pop back out. It actually happened recently in a game we were covering, didn't it?
Yeah, the 97 All-Ireland.
Was it 97, exactly? Yeah. Eugene O'Neill's one went against him. Or did it come off David Hughes's hurl, or did it come off? I thought it came off the crossbar.
I've looked at that 100 times, and I think it hit the crossbar, being honest. I think, you know, David was just unlucky. He probably lost the flight of it, and it hit the crossbar. You know, you expect keepers to deal with that type of ball. I'm sure he has nightmares about it. But to me, it hit the crossbar and came down, and Eamon Taff just caught it lovely on kind of the half volley, just on the bounce, and rifled up into the top corner. And Kevin Keenan done his best to block it. But you know, sometimes you need a bit of luck. We've said that loads of times before. You know, because Offaly had probably got a goal, I won't say against the run of play, but you know, they got Johnny Pilkington's goal to kind of keep them just ahead of a nose ahead of Clare. And it probably needed a goal from Clare to maybe change the whole thing. But they got it just at the right time. You know, a couple of minutes to go, coming down the home stretch, and all the momentum was with him. Even though Offaly got the free straight out of it, after it, from Johnny Dooley, tapped it over, bring it back to a draw, it still looked like there was only going to be one winner at that stage.
It kind of did, yeah. So we're going to do it. Sherlock Nan just knew. So there was a bit of early curse, obviously, that everybody knows about. Poor Mayo can't shake off their curse. If Mayo were 2 points down with 6 or 7 minutes to go, do you think they get a nice handy one off the post? Whatever their curse is, must have been a lot stronger than Biddy's.
God, that's for sure. So poor old Mayo, and they scoring their own goals themselves. they were 2 points down, they'd probably go down and score a goal against themselves, unfortunately. But, yeah, unlucky. But yeah, look, I thought both defences were on top, but like, Dalo was probably quiet for most of the game, but he really came to the fore, I thought, in the last 4 or 5 minutes. He was back, won important ball on his own full back line, clearing it out the field, just big plays, and then obviously stood up when they needed him to hit those, you know, hit the long range free, which hit the crossbar, and then stood up and scored a magnificent 65. And look, I chatted him there lately about that in my podcast, and he said like that, you know, Sean McMahon was coming over to hit it, and Dalo said, "No, I'll hit it." And he was like, "Are you sure?" And he was like, "Yeah, no, I'll hit it." And look, Nan even came running onto the field because Hubert Rigney was down receiving attention. And look, Nan was like, "What are you doing?" And he goes, No, I have this." So, like, what a captain's role to stand up there, you know, and nail that 65, because it was a fantastic effort, because it wasn't an easy one.
No, there's no doubt it wasn't. Come here, on a lighter note, what the hell is Pat O'Connor doing wearing shin pads? And Conor Clancy too. This is outrageous. This is back when hurlers were hard men.
Yeah, well, now Pat O'Connor's from my club, and he is a hard man. But actually, Pat was broke his leg, a double leg fracture, and he was very wary of coming back. So that's why he wore the shin guards. He felt some bit of better protection with his shin guards. I can't speak for Conor Clancy, obviously, but and he was a tough man too. The two of them were tough as nails, so maybe he had an injury as well. I know I used to copy Pat when I was younger as well. I used to buy shin guards and wear the socks down, thinking this was cool. But I wasn't long about copping on and getting rid of them. But, you know, Pat had a right battle with Brian Lawton. Like, Brian Lawton won everything out in front. There's no doubt about it. But what Pat did was actually, he never let him clear the ball. You know, he ran after him, he harassed him, and he flicked the ball off him and only allowed maybe Brian Lawton to hand pass it out. And don't get me wrong, I'm still saying Brian Lawton.
Brian, stop. Brian Lawton put poor Pat O'Connor into his pocket. That was a massacre. Now, stop with your cool dairy rose tinted glasses here.
I know, like, honestly.
It was a massacre.
Brian Lawton was unbelievable. I'm not trying to say he wasn't, but what I'm saying is he might have been completely dominating his position, but it probably is a lesson for someone to stay going and stay and trying to do something with. When Pat O'Connor went off, I thought Brian Lawton cleaned up altogether.
Oh, I don't know. I think there's some cool dairy because Brian Lawton never gave Dignan a puck of it. It was just Troy in the last 10 minutes when Lawton had the injury that he got a few balls out under the side. What about Mike McNamara and Eamon Cregan getting into it? A real kind of petulant kick from Mike after I'd say the two of them shouldered each other.
Yeah, I never actually saw that clip before. I actually did some laughing when I saw it. You know, I threw a little boot at him.
Petulant boot, yeah.
Yeah, and Cregan kind of looked around and going, did that actually happen? It was almost like a Father Ted moment, kicking Bishop Brennan up the arse. And I thought it was brilliant. Mike Mack wasn't afraid to stand up to him anyway. But sure, look, we know from what Luke Nan said about Cregan a couple of years later, there was no love lost between Cregan and those Clare boys.
No, there definitely didn't seem to be all right. Right, we'll leave it there, Brian, because Brian Lohan is on the line now. Brian, we were just talking there about the row between Mike McNamara and Eamon Cregan. It was all kicking off at that stage.
Yeah. We've only become aware of that after the game, that there was a little bit of an altercation, but we wouldn't have known about that at the time, obviously, you know, for just happened. So, and to be honest with you, I don't really know what happened between the two of them.
I think it was something like looked like a bit of a shoulder and a little bit of a kick from Mike then. So, like, I mean, I'm surprised Lachlan didn't bring it up at halftime.
Yeah, he could have, but as regards remembering that, I wouldn't remember that now. After a game, I would barely remember what happened at halftime, not to mind 20 years later or 25 years later.
You've absolutely no chance. What Lachlan was talking about in the lead up to the game was that Offaly can't handle Clare hurling. They can't handle the way we play. What did he mean by that, do you think?
Lachlan has a way of doing things, creating the narrative to what he wanted to get across himself, and maybe it might have been the fact that it was our first All-Ireland final, obviously enough, but what he focused on at the time was that Offaly just couldn't handle Clare hurling. Even from his days when he was playing, he reckoned that they were always able to beat Offaly.
Right.
So they had good hurlers, good skillful players, but he kept focusing on the fact that Offaly will not be able to handle the way we're playing, regardless of all the great players that they had or anything like that. He didn't mention that. It was more that they couldn't handle the way that we play. So maybe in his thinking at the time, okay, it was an All-Ireland final, but that wasn't the big thing. The big thing was that Offaly wouldn't be able to handle the way we're playing.
And was that kind of like the intensity he brought to games?
I don't know, to be honest. I can remember at the time that certainly for our backs, the big thing was that their forwards, that that if we could keep them outside us, you know, that we had to go man to man on them. But the big thing was to keep them outside us, that they weren't going to get inside us. And if they weren't able to get inside us, we'd have a good chance of beating them. Do you know what I mean by inside? As in, while they were the forward line that they had, they were brilliant, skillful players. They weren't the kind of player that would get inside you and take you for a goal, or the a lot of their hurling was done outside the man rather than inside the man.
Right.
You know, like if you were going up against a DJ Carey, for example, there's always that risk.
If he'll go past you.
He'll go past you and it's a goal. Whereas with the Offaly forward line that was there, there wasn't that element of risk that was there. All individually great stickmen, you know, like John Tryon, Johnny Pilkington, all those guys. But as regards blistering pace and, you know, a kind of marquee forward that could really hurt you pace-wise, they didn't have one of those guys.
Right, that's interesting. Like, I mean, because there's no doubt you were well on top. You only conceded 2-8, which is like it's nothing in game of hurling.
Yeah, it was a different the Croke Park pitch or the stadium, more so the pitch that was there was a different kind of ground to the ground that is there at the moment. You know, it was a heavier kind of a ground. And it certainly was more enclosed. It was very difficult to find space, you know, very difficult to get in your clearances. And likewise for a forward, very difficult to get your shot away. You know, if you were looking at the hooks and blocks, you know, there was no one looking at hooks and blocks and turnovers back then. But if they were looking at them, you know, the stats would have been very high because it was so difficult to get your strike away.
Yeah. It was probably for that reason it was a scrappy enough game, was it, Brian? Like, I mean, we're doing a lot of All-Ireland finals now, looking back on them, and, you know, like the 97 final would have been a much higher standard, you know, and it seemed like there were a lot of nerves out there that day, though.
I don't know. It was a physical game. Like, even the semi-final that we played that year was, you know, the ball was moving up and down the field a bit more, whereas this was, it was a more dogged, physical, more physical, plenty of hitting, plenty of physical exchanges, you know, between at all sides of the field, so in the forwards and the backs, you know, all over the field it was physical. And probably the things that you remember most about the game, you know, the belt that Ollie Baker in the last 5 minutes hit, that's probably the image from the game that you'll remember more than any of the other ones, you know. So it's, you know, it definitely was physical. It was physical. I don't know if you call it scrappy. That's not being too kind in the game. Like, but it was physical. Yeah, it was physical. It definitely was.
I think it was the 2 points before half time were huge scores, because Offaly just got a goal. It was a fluke of a goal, and that put them 4 up. And the 2 scores just before half time, at least you'd something to build on. Then, you know, you went in, I'm sure the you know, the mood in the dressing room would have been a lot different had you been 4 down after conceding a fluky goal.
Yeah, no, you have a very poor goal that we conceded, but crucially, we did get those couple of scores, and Sparrow got a really Sparrow
that brilliant one, yeah.
Parky piece. Yeah, it was, you know, let the ball came in, he lets the ball beat him, goes into the corner, and it's a kind of a shot to nothing. Like, it was, you know, on the 21 or maybe inside the 21, but he has, even in training now, he was very good at that. Like, that he was very able, very good striker from that kind of angle and that kind of that acute angle to get him over the bar. So for him, for most forwards, that would be a kind of a 50-50 shot, but for him it was a kind of an 80-20 shot. You know, he was just very good from playing in that particular corner for years.
Well, and years. He's a weird one, Sparrow. Like, he could get a really hard one there like that, and then he could miss an easy one.
Yeah, it was, but that was kind of like his party piece, really. He could throw him over the bar from that kind of position, yeah. You know, that position that he was used to being in. So it was crucial, really, really crucial point for us. And, you know, Sparrow all year was producing crucial scores. You know, he was excellent all year.
One thing that struck me was the noise in the stadium when you ran out in the pitch, because Offaly had been out there pucking around for a little while, and then, you know, you were announced and you ran out. Have you any memory of the noise? Because you sprinted out, like you were going down the coming down where the old dressing rooms were, down near the canal end. You were coming out of there 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it was. Look, it was all new to us. Like it was a different time. It was like if you were to go back and just be a fly on the wall in the dressing room that day, like that dressing room was full. 15-20 minutes before we went out on the field, that was full. You know, it was all press people, various people from, you know, with care connections from around Dublin. All seemed to be inside in the dressing room.
And there were tiny dressing rooms. I remember being in them.
They were tiny. It was just before they redeveloped the Hogan Stand side of the field. So, yeah. But it was a different time. Like nowadays, you know, you don't have any of that presence of reporters or people from the press being in immediately before matches, but at that time that was accepted then, and that was the way it was done, and that was the way it was done then. Yeah.
So when you pulled your hamstring in the semi-final against Galway, and the first time you had sprinted on that hamstring was running out onto the pitch. Is that right? You hadn't actually tested it out fully before that.
That was the advice that I got. So yeah. We say Cullen Flynn, who was our physio at the time, and we at the time we would have used Dr. Khan down in Cork, for, you know, he had an association with hurling and football for years and years, I went down to see him, you know, after I pulled the hamstring. And his advice at the time, listen, he says, you're not going to be able to get this sorted before the match. Just rest up. And first time you should sprint is running out onto the field. That was his advice at the time. And that's what we did. Now, I did, you know, in the lead up to a game, like you'd be in Kingswick Park, say I was doing my, while the lads were playing their matches, I was doing, you know, press ups and sit ups and, you know, 40 meter, not sprints, but kind of going to 85% or 90% on your sprint, but not, you know, when you pull a hamstring, anyone who has pulled a hamstring, you're always, it's at the back of your mind all the time that, Jesus, if I go a little bit further, it might go on me.
Yeah.
And that was in the back of my head up to the game.
Right.
Advice I got, not sprinting it, and that's what I did.
So you got through 5 minutes into the second half then, you pulled it. Did you pull it badly, or did you pull it as bad as the Galway game, or, you know, how bad was it?
It wasn't that bad, but if someone had taken me on, I was gone.
Right.
So if Dighton came in at one stage and he took me on, gave a bad pass to John Troy.
Running pass.
And it broke in behind, and then John Troy was in for the last 10-15 minutes of the game, and a couple of balls broke out to the wing, and you can get out to it, but if you were to turn and come back in, you were goosed. So
right.
It was but obviously he wouldn't have known that.
No, and were you trying to kind of disguise it from Troy that there was something wrong with you? Because, you know, Troy got on a couple of balls with 10 minutes to go. Now, he wouldn't be blessed with pace anyways, but he didn't sense that, you know, you weren't 100%.
Yeah, well, no, he wouldn't have been, and he wouldn't have been on me, when it went either, so he mightn't have picked up on
right.
The fact that the hamstring was under pressure. So, you know yourself, it's only when someone takes you on that you really feel how badly the hamstring is when someone takes you on. So he wouldn't have been aware of that. So, you know, he got two balls right underneath the Hogan Stand and struck both of them. One of them I was on the ground, and I can still see the ball being struck, and it only went, they were three up at the time, and that was to put them four up, and it just drifted by maybe an inch, 2 inch outside the post. So, he struck the ball well, but they just drifted, and he was a brilliant striker. So, for him now, that would, he would have been expecting to put it over. Like, it would be an 80-20 shot for him as well. Like, so,
yeah, because the lady luck was on your side, because Taff scored the goal and he was going to be taken off. And then it was from Dalo, attempted point, and it came straight back off. Was it a crossbar or was it off David Hughes's hurl? Straight back to Taff. So there was definitely there was somebody looking down on you that day.
Yeah, it was extraordinary, really, because when you think of it, the guy who was hitting the freeze, like Shawnee had started the game brilliantly, got the first point from play, put it over the bar, then took every one of his frees, landed every one of his frees. So everyone, he was on 100% on his frees, and then Dalo decides that he was going taking the taking the long frees and took the 65 that won it.
Yeah.
So there was no sense to that. a guy who had been hitting them all year and putting them over the bar all year hadn't missed one in the game, and then Dalo decides to take him, and just felt good about him, and took the shot, set up the goal, and then when the 65 came in the last minute or whenever it was, to put us a point up, Dalo decides to stand over, puts it straight over. And we got an insurance point then after that from free, from Jamesy. But fair play to Dalo, like, he called it and he just went up, took the shot, put it straight over the bar.
Right, and he would have had seniority over you, more relatively young fellas there, that he could call, he could make those calls on the field, I suppose.
Yeah, he was kind of he wanted it. If a player wants it. And he obviously did want it. He was feeling good about it. He was, he had a brilliant, brilliant second half in particular. Had a good game all through, but his second half in particular, he was outstanding. So he was getting on the ball. He was very confident. There was no instruction came from the sideline or anything like that. He just decided to take it. So. He would have, he was the captain of the team. He was a great leader for us. And I don't think he ever made too many. Don't think he ever made any mistakes. From that perspective, like, so.
We were talking about his speeches there. Obviously, that All Ireland one was a great one, and the Whipping Boys of Munster was a great one. Like, I get goosebumps watching that, and I'm from Leash.
Yeah. Well, I think not to be revealing too many secrets, but I think Dalo had practiced that 95 speech before he had to make it. So, he thought about it for a long time, and he is well able to talk, and he is well able to give a good speech. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he definitely is. Do you think the backroom teams are so big now that the presentation speeches are just tanking 20 different people, and sure, the crowd are losing the will to live by the time they're over? Like, the personality's gone out of them altogether.
Yeah, it's different. Certainly is different now, yeah. It's different. But still, a great honour for anyone to go up and to accept a cup. But it is different now. You also see, because the backroom team is so good, everyone has notes, I suppose in particular Cluxton, they've won it for the last 5 years, and each time he's reading out his notes. So yeah, it was different back then. We had obviously Loch Nan, Tony Gonsolin, and Mike Mack, and then Colin Flynn, and that was kind of your backroom. So
yeah.
Your psychologist was Loch Nan. He was, your strength and conditioning coach was you know, Mike Mack, all the tactical stuff was looking at him as well and constant, you know, and then any of the physio stuff and kind of a little bit of psychology as well would have been Colin Flynn. You know, so yeah, that was, I suppose, people had to double up on roles or triple up on roles, or, you know, it was a different kind of regime, but it was the same for every inter-county setup.
Yeah,
that was there.
No, it was at that time. Career, so Offaly got the revenge then in 98, just to finish up with you. Like, I saw you're on record as saying that game should have been awarded to you. We did the 98 final a couple of weeks ago. Offaly obviously went on to win it, because he never really recovered from 98 in a way, Brian, did you?
Yeah, well, we played the game and we won the game. Referee blew the whistle. We were 2 points up. Barry Murphy had the ball in his hands down the corner. And then at the time, say, Colin Lynch was suspended and I was suspended as a result of the Waterford match previously where Lynch got the line. Well, no, I got the line. And Lynch
he was done after, yeah. He was done after.
He was done afterward on the someone saw him from the crowd hitting. No, I think everyone saw him in the crowd that was there at the throw-in, and that was dangerous play or whatever it was. And he got suspended as a result of that. So, but from my perspective, or from the Clare perspective, you know, the referee, you're always told that the game is over once the referee blew the final whistle, and the referee blew the final whistle. So I don't think that it should have gone to a replay. We were ahead at that stage. And then it was very difficult to come back into it then after that. We went down, we played Offaly in Thurles, and they beat us a couple of points in a great performance from Offaly. No, in fairness, they were excellent on the day. We found it very hard to get frees, you know. The match against Offaly that we played, it was Jimmy Cooney was refereeing it. You know, Jimmy wouldn't have had a huge amount of experience at that level, and yet he got the game. And we found it very difficult to get frees that day. We would have felt that things had gone against us a bit. And then in the end, we were beaten by, you know, a couple of points, but still we were beaten. Best team, if you were looking on that third day, the best team won the game, so we couldn't have any complaints about that. But complaints about why we may go to the third. I don't think you've any other incident or any other time where said a referee's decision, the final whistle was blown. I think there might have been one minor game where a team was asked to replay it. But we, and this is in the history of the GA, like, this is going back, you know, over 100 years. I think there was one other case, minor game. That was our experience.
Fair play, Brian. Thanks very much for taking the call. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, Colm, talk to you soon. Good luck now.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park, the same year. Can't touch this. And they were being hockey. But the camera went in, there was a fella warming up. Well, Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, the fuck. He was massive. Legs, arse, built. But I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know you can't touch this. Look at my eyes, man.
All right, so Clare 1-13, Offaly 2-8. What a low-scoring game here, Brian. And, like, I mean, whether you want, like, to admit it or not, Offaly were dreadful and Clare were just slightly better. Now, having said that, both defences were excellent.
Yeah, as I said, I thought both defence were definitely on top. You know, almost to a man, they won their battles. Probably the only forward that hurled above himself was Fergie Tooey. Like, what a performance, particularly in that second half.
Yeah.
You know, 4 points he finished up with, but three huge scores in that second half when Clare really needed them. You know, I'd say most of the forwards that were on display that day were actually disappointed with how they hurled. You know, look, I know you're probably accusing me of bias towards Pat O'Connor. Yes, I am not saying he out-hurled Brian Lawton by far in the way he didn't, but full forwards back then had a different role. It was much more a stopping type of a role. You know, you look at Conor Clancy at the other end, it was an attempt to try and, you know, hold up play and stop the fullback from dominating. And, you know, Clancy came out the field and probably did better at that. I thought Kevin Keenan was absolutely immense from Offaly perspective. He won every single ball that came in.
He was brilliant, especially in the second half. Yeah, we'll get to a few of them in performance of the weekend, because there were some good standout performances.
Yeah, there definitely was. The top Frank Lawton as well, obviously, you know, he was immense. He cleared some of the ball out in front as well. But, you know, the Clare backs, they kept it really, really tight. I thought both half-back lines were brilliant at filtering back into their full-back line and, you know, mopping up a lot of balls. So it was very hard to play nice low ball inside to each of the full forward lines. You know, midfield, I thought Offaly were just about shading that. You know, Ollie Baker, you know, he had some big moments, and particularly a big moment near the end. He won one ball and, you know, while in possession, he turned Kevin Martin upside down with a big shoulder. I thought it was showed his power and strength. But, you know, awfully, I thought in the first half, Johnny Pilkington, Dottie Regan, I thought they definitely were winning that battle in midfield.
Well, incredibly, at halftime, I listened to the halftime analysis, and DJ Carey and Ger Hegarty said that Offaly were struggling in midfield. They said Dahi Regan was struggling and Johnny Pilkington was anonymous. Now, if you want to have a look at Dahi Regan's contribution to that first half, he scored the first point of the game, and that was an advertisement of why ground hurling should never be used. It was Ollie Baker just ground hurled straight to him. But he made a great run for Deignan's fluky goal. And he got a great catch as well, straight from a puck out, hand passed it back to John Try for a point. And Try really needed that point. So, like, I mean, out of a very low tally, he's directly responsible for 1-2. And there was other little bits and pieces he was in as well. So to say Dahi Regan's struggling is just the most bizarre piece of analysis. At least Tomás Mulcahy corrected him in the co-com and said he didn't agree with it.
Yeah, like, look, I thought Offaly were on top there, definitely. You know, Dahi and Johnny, you know, they dovetailed each other. Obviously, they hurled for Burr as well, and they were well used to it. And they had won a Club All-Ireland earlier that season. You know, that's what led to Johnny being captain of Offaly. So they knew each other's game, and I thought they hurled really, really well together. You know, you couldn't agree with that analysis, being honest. I thought they were excellent. I thought Brian Whelan was brilliant as well in the half-back position. And, you know, he told another brilliant story as well on the podcast about where he was left behind in the hotel, in the Ashling Hotel. He had to get a taxi to All Ireland and got dropped off in Dorset Street and had to run down through the crowd to get into Croke Park. That was his warm up for that All Ireland. You know, it's mad too. No one knows that. You know, there's probably 65,000 of that, and not, you know, only a handful of people actually knowing what he was after going through.
I thought Brian Whelan had a great game. He made an unbelievable hook on, I think it was the Sparrow in the second half for a definite goal. Was it Sparrow?
Yeah, Sparrow. Yeah, brilliant hook, because it was a certain goal. You know, Sparrow was just, you know, letting fly, that was it, in the back of the net, and just Whelan got back. Brilliant anticipation, obviously, to see where the danger was, but a brilliant execution of a hook as well, because, you know, I've been there myself many times, you could be right over it, but to actually execute it so well, make sure he got no touch in the ball whatsoever. Brilliant, brilliant hook. But, you know, he was unlucky too. You know, that very last play, Ollie Baker up the field, what was he even doing up there? But did enough just to shunt Brian Whelan out over the end line, and just done it in a way that it wasn't deemed a free as well. So, you know, no qualms about that. That's not awfully biased. I thought it was a 65. You know, Baker had done really well to play him out over the end line without giving away the free. But, you know, James O'Connor did trouble him a little bit when he went on him in the last 10 minutes, maybe. James, he had a couple of very poor wides, you know.
He had four.
Yeah,
I was looking at this. So, like, I mean, it said it in the commentary. So, four bad wides. One, his second wide was almost incredible for Jamesy O'Connor. Like, yeah, we're talking about a Hall of Famer here, and he seemed to have lost his head completely. He had seven shots at the goal in that match and scored once.
Yeah, like, look at
his last free. No, he had two frees in the end, so he had eight shots frees and scored twice,
and he had two gimme frees then as well. You know,
they were gimmies, just, they were gimmies,
just tap overs, but you know, he probably took one free on he shouldn't have taken. But yeah, there was handy point scoring opportunities for Jamesy, and that's why I spoke a couple of weeks ago about his vindication or his performance in that second half against Tipperary 97, where he scored that first point from playing that second half. It was that weight off his shoulders, you know, and he just cut loose for those last 25 minutes in 97. Whereas, you know, every point or every wide he had in that All-Ireland, it just made it worse and worse and worse for him. And look, you're right, look, there was a couple of ones that you'd be expecting him just to tap him over. So he was troubling Sid from a different perspective, that he was getting shots off, but, you know, I thought prior to that, he was probably the third or fourth person that Clare tried on Brian Whelan and had got no joy off him whatsoever.
Yeah, no, geez, Brian, what did you make of, or Brian Lohan, you mean, what did you make of Brian Lohan's comment that they always tried to keep the Offaly forwards on their outside because Offaly forwards didn't have, DJ Carey blistering pace. They were brilliant stick men and they were great hurlers, but they could never, they weren't the type of players that could ever trouble you going past you.
I think it's a very, very fair analysis, being honest. And obviously that comes back to their mindset and their hard work they had done in terms of the running, and they trusted that they had the legs on the Offaly forwards. And they did, being honest. And you can see their viewpoint. Like, Offaly didn't have blistering pace, but they obviously had brilliant hurlers and you usually had to work the ball into space and take their point scoring opportunities. But Offaly missed some simple chances too.
Oh, did they?
Straight away of John Try's one straight in front of the goal. A gimme score, like, you know.
Kevin Martin had a bad wide. Johnny Dooley had a mishit shot. And Try had two wides. So, like, there was a feeling Clare were completely pucking it away. And Offaly were playing terribly, but we're just going to hang on. If you were watching it live, that would kind of be the analysis that you would be coming up with.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Like, cause, look, as I said, I thought it was a dour game. It's not one of the most free-flowing spectacles we've ever seen. And even the weather, like, you know, it was a dark kind of overcast day in Croke Park that day. And, you know, it was just kind of a mad atmosphere. You know, it was like awfully not hurling well, still looked to be doing enough to be in front, and then just got caught with that sucker punch at the end. And look, I've said it a couple of times already, it came back to that belief of Clare. The tighter it was, the more it went on, they just believed that was somewhere they would get their opportunities.
Yeah, that was it. Offaly forwards only scored 3 points from play in the whole game, and a fluke of a goal. Like, I mean, the goal, I don't know what Deignan was trying to do with the goal. It was a terrible mistake by Davy Fitz, really. Like, I mean, very uncharacteristic for Davy. And DJ Carey made the point at halftime that Davy would be used to playing with a dry ball, and it was a wet ball that day or something. But, like, I mean, I presume Davy would have been playing with wet balls in training. I'm not sure if that. I could see the point he was trying to make. Maybe I'm.
Yeah, he was probably trying to be nice to him. I suppose, you know, that he'd made a big mistake in that Ireland final day, and I suppose that'd be DJ's nature. But, you know, Davy wasn't the keeper that he was a couple of years later either. You know, he was nervous. That mistake, you know, affected him, because even the ball dropped in around the square on the ground in the second half, and he dives out with him, flicks it out the sideline. You know, like, the keeper we know of, Davy, he never would have done that. You know, he'd taken control of that and burst out, and, you know, he was obviously gone nervous at that stage. But, you know, he made a mistake. He should have probably caught the ball, was trying to make sure by putting the hurl to it if it was a greasy ball. But it just shows the danger of doing that too sometimes, because it can just skid off the surface of your hurl and it went behind him. You know, it was a bad, bad mistake. You know, Dignan probably should have carried that another couple of yards and hit it even off his right-hand side, where he'd open up his body to shoot coming in from that angle. You know,
Dignan had a nightmare.
He sure did. And considering, you know, that he wasn't playing in 94 and he would have been, you know, feeling that he was hard done by in 94. I know he was coming back from injury, but you know, he would have been mad for, he would have thinking he'd been mad for Road, but he got very frustrated early on, you know.
Yeah, he's not a, I wouldn't think he was, he wouldn't be anywhere near a natural corner forward. Is it? What would the idea of starting him in there be and bringing Joe Dooley out to the wing?
Yeah, I suppose, look, they just thought that maybe Joe, you know, off Liam Dial, that Joe might have suited him, might have been able to pick, you know, a few scores off him, but God, Liam Dial had some performance, particularly in that second half. He just, the ball was like a magnetum. He cleared ball after ball. Joe Daly, they gave him every opportunity. But I suppose at the same time, they never moved him. You know, they left him wing forward. They probably, you know, considering the experience that Joe had at that stage, having played in 84 and 85, they probably should have put him back into his more natural position, back in corner forward. You know, maybe bring Dighton out the field. He went into full forward, as you said. He got no change out of Brian Lawton in there whatsoever. You know, Billy Dooley, apart from his very first score, you know, Frank Lawton completely dominated.
Destroyed him.
You know, it was one of the best games I ever seen Frank Lawton play. So, you know, probably from an Offaly perspective, they were probably quick to take lads off. But, you know, maybe Joe probably was a little bit hard done by, could have been moved into the corner.
What did you make of all the Offaly lads going into their positions before the game and the Clare lads staying in the huddle? I'm trying to retrace where this huddle started in the GAA. Since we've been doing these nostalgia matches, I think I have this nailed on as Clare started in 1995.
I think you're right too. That's my recollection of it as well. I can't remember any other team doing it before them.
It started gradually starting to, you know, team after team taking it on.
Yeah, and like probably then I remember Cork, you know, that great Cork team in the noughties. They brought it to another level where they went in, maybe the goalie and the full back line and the half back line, they went in threes and put their arms around each other.
Right.
That was a different kind of spin on it. And then obviously it's probably spiraled out of control now, where it's gone a bit easy, where you see them standing over in the sideline in a one line with all the subs and the management and all that sort of rubbish. But I don't know, there was something iconic too about going to your position, wasn't there?
I used to love it. I preferred it.
I used to love it too, yeah. You know, standing in your position beside the man you're going to mark, shake hands with each other, maybe have a little stare at each other or whatever. And stand for the national anthem, and then you're ready to go, helter skelter. You know,
I prefer that. Yeah, because it was man on man. I always said it on the football show that in 2007, Liam Kearns told us, instead of this huddle thing, you're going to go down to your positions and let Dublin do their huddle. And as they're walking down, you're in your area, and this is where you own that area, and they're walking over to you, and you shake their hand, and you look them in the eye. I really liked it because I remember that's what it was like when you started, and I don't know why it is. Oh, you have to be hugging your teammate while that's going on. I think it looks much better if the players are in their positions, and I think there's more of a gladiator man on man type of thing.
Fully agree with you. And you know, I hate that hugging or putting your arms around each other.
Yeah.
Even in a team photo, it drives me mad. I'm like, I know we're a team, but you're still right. It's a man on man combative game. That's what it's all about, and you have to win your own position as part of that, and stand up and be a man. And you know, I'm firmly behind you on that one. Maybe it's because we were brought up that way, but I way prefer it that way. I'd love if the GAA brought in that rule and brought them, you know, you had to stand to attention for the national anthem, and even breaking away before the national anthem. That actually annoys me as well. I just think it's disrespectful. And I know people say, oh, they're mad for action and they're ready to go. I say, no, seriously, lads, you know, you have another 10 seconds here or whatever. Stand and have a bit of respect.
Yeah, how will you blame the crowd? You blame the crowd for that.
Still the players, you know, the players don't need to break. You know what I mean? They can stand. The crowd shout and roar anyway. I think that's par for the course. You're going to get that. But I think the GAA should bring it back in, being honest. I'd love to see it come back in, but you know, probably won't at this stage.
Eamon Cregan said after the game, or a few years later, he says, I could tell things weren't right. They knew they were up against it in 94, but there wasn't the same drive in 95. It was the same with us in 1974. That's probably what he's talking about with Limerick. He says, I remember asking them after the semi-final what they'd make of Clare. What they'd made of Clare. They said, yeah, they're good, all right, but we'll beat them, was the attitude. That struck a chord with me. I wanted to hear Jesus, we'll have a work cut out to beat them. So there was maybe a little bit of, Offaly played with it like a team that, I don't know, they were a bit like that in 94 too, until the feckin' pulled it out of the bag at the end.
Yeah, they were kind of, look, I think the Offaly team were a funny bunch from that perspective anyway. You know, like, they didn't turn up during the league. They sputtered through Leinster most years until they actually had a second chance. You know, like, it was only when it was knockout that they really took Leinster serious. The statistics speak for themselves. They never won one past 95. you know, so, you know, from that team's perspective, they knew they were very good, but I suppose the type of characters that they still needed everything, like any sports team, they still needed everything to be pushing in the right direction. They thought they were better than Clare in that All-Ireland final. And as I said, the mindset of the match and the way it went through, I think that was quite evident. But, you know, Clare had something different about them, and they were on a mission that day, and they were going to do whatever it took. And I suppose the All-Ireland semi-final, I'll say it, I don't think Clare got the credit they deserved for beating Galway. You know, awfully beat down. You know, they did what they needed to do, and they won comfortably enough in the end. But like, that All-Ireland semi-final didn't do awfully any good leading into that All-Ireland either.
Right, okay. Right, we'll come back with performance of the weekend.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Okay, performance of the weekend, and I'm going to start with Brian Lohan, not just because he's on the show here, Brian, but look, we disagree here. I think Pat O'Connor will never forget the mauling he got by Brian Lohan, and Michael Deignan went in and he got a woeful mauling as well, and it was only when John Troy went in for the last 10-15 minutes that he got a bit of change, but sure, Lohan had a bad hamstring at that stage, so could only kind of shadow John Troy. Do you know what I mean? Couldn't do his usual, I'll bull out past you and I'll just best you out away. You know, that kind of a way. Unusual to see Brian Lohan following a lad, you know, and just standing a few yards off him.
Yeah, it was. And look, he'd hurt that hamstring in the semi-final as well against Galway. Yeah. Stayed on that day too, because that was in the telly the other day and TG Carr, and I'd forgotten that aspect of it. So obviously it was troubling him going into that All-Ireland final. And look, you're right. Look, I'm not trying to say that Pat O'Connor won the duel. Far from it. Like, Brian Lohan absolutely destroyed him in terms of winning ball. And you know, he went through two or three markers. And, you know, like, the strength of character to be able to hurl with a torn hamstring in an All-Ireland final. I don't know how torn it was, obviously.
He pulled it.
But still, it doesn't matter. Like, to have anything wrong with you in an All-Ireland final and to keep going, just shows, you know, how unbelievable this fellow was. Brilliant, brilliant hurler, and obviously big performance on the biggest day of them all for Clare that day. So, you know, he really did lead from the back. You have to give him credit for that.
In a weird way, it was good that it was John Troy was getting the balls off him, because like Brian said, that if someone took him on, he would have been gone. Now, I've done my hamstring enough times, Brian, to know that you could probably jog half pace on a pulled hamstring, probably not a torn one. And that's what Brian, it looked to me, was doing. He was jogging out after him, you know, making sure he was on his outside, like he says. But sure, John Troy would never go try and go past someone. So, you know, Troy was the perfect one to have gone in on him that time.
And you see, I suppose, awfully, it wasn't until probably later on in 98 that they tried something different when, you know, their need was most. They tried Johnny Pilkington there to trouble Brian Lohan. You know, someone with pace had put their head down and run at him. You know, Brian Whelan obviously went up full forward at times in those trilogies as well, in that second game, I think it was. And, you know, obviously went full forward for Dal Ireland too. So, you know, awfully didn't have those real pacey forwards, and, you know, we've talked about that. So, you know, lucky enough, I've never actually pulled a hamstring or even torn a hamstring. I suppose I've never gone fast enough to actually to pull them, so I'm not able to empathise with them and know what they were going through, really.
Geez, I have to say, Frank Lohan, Billy Dooley scored a brilliant early point, and you're thinking here, this he could be on song today. And geez, Frank Lohan gave Billy Dooley a terrible roasting after that. Billy Dooley barely felt the weight of the ball, and Frank consistently won it, almost Brian Lohan-esque kind of the way he was bursting out with it.
yeah, he was fantastic, being honest. And that first point that Billy got, actually, it's an iconic picture as well, where Frank and Brian Lawton are wrapping Johnny Dooley up in the tackle, and you know, Johnny's frantically trying to get the hand pass off and gets it away all right, but you know, still Billy had a bit of work to do to score it. And as you said, look, you'd be thinking, off, they've gone 2 points and no score up, they're on top of their game, 2 scores from play. And but you're right, Frank Lawton, I thought, was immense at cornerback. You know, the amount of ball he won, anything that went over in that corner, high, low, getting out in front, coming, sweeping even across Brian Lawton at times, in behind Anthony Daly, he was immense. Definitely. Yeah.
No, he was absolutely brilliant. Fergie Toohey, like, I mean, he stood up and he needed to stand up because the Clare forwards weren't playing well, especially in the first half. They were getting toothless tigers is what they were up there. They had no kind of danger, probably until De Sparrow got that great score just before halftime.
Yeah, like, and again, coming back to big moments, I thought, you know, Offaly got the goal, the fluky goal just before halftime. It pushed them in front, 4 points at that stage, I think it was, and very, very, very soft free, I thought, against Offaly. You know, Dickie Murphy, the free against Kevin Martin for overcarrying, and that was not a free. You know,
no,
Kevin
that was
Martin
desperate.
Indicated, look, my arm was pulling, and it was. But that free would never have been given because it wasn't even steps.
Cause, no.
You know, it was desperate soft free. And then, as you said, Sparrow got the point, a great score. You know, he just done what you like to see from a current forward, just got his nudge of the hips on Shane McGuckin to get that ball in space, and you know, stopped up to hit it. It looked like he was kind of doing the real wrong thing, but got the right distance on it and just crept over the bar. Brilliant score, and that, I suppose, gave Clare a lot of belief, because they, you know, they took the blow of the goal, responded with a couple of points,
yeah,
and you know, had it back to 2 at halftime. Because I even just looking at their body language running off the field at halftime, you know, they all came running, you know, with purpose off. They knew what they were part of. Whereas Offaly were kind of probably like sluggish and coming off the field thinking, geez, this is not going the way we expected. But, you know, you're right about Fergie Toohey. To go back to him, I thought his performance was absolutely excellent in a tight game where backs were completely on top, to score 4 points. Three of them when he went in centre forward off Hubert Rigney. Brilliant, brilliant performance.
Yeah, that was a really big performance by him. For me, the three nominations, if you were doing Sunday game, would have been Brian Lohan, Frank Lohan and Fergie Toohey. Now, obviously, Kevin Kinahan, because Offaly lost, he wouldn't be in the shake-up, but he was on a par with any of those three performance-wise. His second-half performance was out of this world.
Unbelievable. You know, even, look, in the first half, he won everything that came near him as well, but probably didn't have the same amount of clearances. But the second half, oh my God, like, talk about an exhibition of catching ball. He caught one of them with his fingers out over Sir Lines, I think it was, or someone like that at one stage, or the Sparrow maybe, and just, he was absolutely brilliant. And I fell for him though, because he made that mistake at the end, you know.
What was that free for? Was that for a throw ball?
So he threw up the ball to strike it, obviously. Sir Lines got a hook on him, and what happened was he pulled back the other way, so he pulled both ways. Very technical foul. I would say 99 times out of 100 that free wouldn't have been given.
So when you say he's trying to explain that,
you can't if you swing a hurl one way, you can't pull back the other way in the next motion.
Oh, like you're almost using a sword or something. You can't be
exactly
whipping over, right?
Yeah, so that's called pulling both
ways. Why would you want to pull back the other way? You'd be hitting the ball the wrong way.
Because at that stage the ball had bounced, so he suppose he was just trying to flick it back maybe out into the corner.
Well, even if it falls on the ground, you can't pull back the other way like that, right? You only have to keep going forward.
Yeah. So if you pull, it's all, as I said, the layman's terms is pulling both ways. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. I didn't know
so
that.
That's what he got pulled for. As I said, that particular foul is very, very rarely blown up. It was a free, so there's probably no point in complaining either.
Right. Well, you never see that in the model. I don't think I've ever seen a free for anything like that.
Yeah, but look, it's probably not as prevalent now, because obviously people aren't pulling on the ball as much as they used to be. Whereas back then, I suppose, you know, there was an awful lot more ground hurling, and I suppose it's quite dangerous if someone actually does pull both ways, because if you think about it, if you're pulling one way, then you just turn around and someone's wide open. It was one probably that was done for safety more than anything.
Right, right, okay. Anthony Daly, I suppose, deserves a mention. Not a spectacular game, but he did an excellent second half. And I suppose, like, I didn't know at the start when you were saying it, and when Brian was saying that he overruled Shawnee McMahon, who hadn't missed one all day. Like, you wonder, like, it's bizarre because he missed that free that came off the post. Do you know, like, I know he's like, you'll package it now and say he set up the goal. He didn't really. He missed that. He missed that. Was it a free or a 65? I think it was a free.
It was a free, yeah.
And he missed that.
Yeah, and then stood up again, like, you know,
and then did it again. Yeah. Well, now when the goal comes off it, you can convince yourself you set it up in your own head.
Yeah.
You know?
But he just said that he hit a free early on in the game, and he melted it. Basically, he just drove it as far as he, and he felt good about hitting long range frees, and just felt he was striking the ball really well. Even though, as he said himself, he didn't hit a lot of ball in that game. But I suppose from a clear perspective, is he nullified Johnny Dooley, who got
that was
early
a big
score.
Thing. That was a big thing.
But, you know, I suppose neither of them actually hurt, really. You know, the kind of way, just kind of game kind of bypassed them. But look, as I said, looking back in it, Offaly were probably slow on the line. You know, they left Johnny Dooley there, they left Billy Dooley getting roasted. You know, Joe Dooley was, he got every opportunity at wing forward, but, you know, probably should have been moved into corner forward. And, you know, so I thought Offaly didn't probably do enough to try and counteract Clare's dominance from that perspective. But you're right, Daly deserves a kind of a nomination for standing up for as a captain, particularly in those last 5-10 minutes. Because as I said, I thought he won a lot of very important ball in play as well.
Yeah, and his speech, I suppose. We'll give him a nomination for the speech more than anything else. And the last 65, which sailed over lovely. I suppose on the Offaly team, very difficult to pick other nominations. Dahi Regan, I thought, was very good through a brilliant first half. And I thought some of his deliveries into the forward line in the second half were very, very good as well. Like, you know, almost modern type of deliveries with a good low trajectory into the likes of Troy. Brian Whelihan, very good. Maybe Jamesy gave him trouble, but Jamesy couldn't put it over the bar, but the block, I suppose, or the hook on Sparrow, and you know, he just played well throughout. Very rare you'd see him not playing well anyways, but I suppose it's hard to see any more on the Offaly side outside of Keenahan's the obvious one, Whelihan and Regan.
Yeah, and maybe Martin Hanamy, to be fair, he dominated, you know, Stephen McNamara, and I thought he was quite good, but you know, a couple of poor clearances maybe rushed him, but Martin very, very rarely gave anything away. Tough as nails, back cornerback. But as I said, up front, then obviously they did very, very little joy up there. Yeah, so it was probably one to forget from an Offaly perspective, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. So who will we give this to? I'm going to go again. I think Shawnee McMahon got it. I don't know where they were coming from. Shawnee McMahon's man of the match. He played well, but like for me, Fergie Toohey has to get man of the match. That in a really tight game to get 4 from play, you know, and 3 in the second half when it was nip and tuck. You're only scoring 113 and you're getting 4 from play when a lot of other forwards around you aren't, like, even, you know, higher profile, aren't performing. For me, Fergie Toohey was the man of the match.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. We are this one, because I fully agree with you. Looking back at that again yesterday, you know, it is mad looking back at it through different lens. But if ever someone stood up when they needed him, and you know, Fergie too, he wasn't, you know, he obviously always used to chip in with a couple of scores, but you know, he was the forward on the day for both teams. 4 points in a tight game, where backs on top. Brilliant performance, and I fully agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and I suppose should have given Conor Clancy a mention, who was at nothing in a full forward, but got on a few balls then when he went out the field, and you know, made himself a bit of a nuisance. But you're right, Fergie Toohey, man of the match. We've agreed. You did your best to turn me off Brian Lowen, even though he took the call today. And you know what I'm like? I'm a soft touch for that kind of thing. This is the first time we've overruled the caller here. Fergie Toohey, it's hard not to pick Fergie on that second half performance, and all true. Right, Brian, we'll leave it there. That's it. We'll see what we'll be back with next week with some more nostalgia next Monday, and we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.